Ladies and gentlemen, many people focus inappropriately on the role of the media and its position in the discourse of people's effort to obtain relevant and truthful information and insight, and the relevance of both to enhanced awareness and increased knowledge and deepened understanding. And we have four individuals who do this all day, nearly every day of the week. And this has been their career. It represents, amongst the four of them, at least a century of effort of trying to tell the truth and do the right thing in the right way for the right reasons at the right time. It's an uphill battle, and if indeed the media, in many cases in the United States, has confused and misled us, it also has enormous potential to approach the soft underbelly of objectionable policies, namely public attitudes. And key to public attitudes is information, and the media plays a central role in that, not a marginal one. We have Dr. Abdul Rahim Fukara to chair this session. Many will remember him from last year when we asked him to speak as much from the heart as from the head in terms of Arab feelings towards the United States and their multifaceted dynamics, aspects, and dimensions. Born in Morocco, Morocco not being a marginal country at all, it's Arab country, Islamic country, Mediterranean country, African country, also happens to be, without any competition, as America's first friend during the time of the administration of our first president, George Washington. He went to Great Britain and obtained his doctorate at Columbia on Western and colonial imperial literature, and American and Western literature, and focusing on the apartheid system of South Africa. He worked for the BBC for at least a decade. This is when I first met him, at least around 15, 20 years ago, before relocating to the United States, to Boston and New York, where he has been involved in educational programming ever since, and been in Washington as the head of the Bureau of Al Jazeera International for the last 2 years, where he produced and hosts a program called From Washington to help millions of Arabs understand American issues and policies. Dr. Fukara.
Thank you very much, Dr. Anthony. It's a real pleasure for me to be here today to chair this panel. We are, as has already been pointed out, at the threshold of a U.S. election, obviously of historic importance. This is actually my fourth election in terms of coverage. I covered 96, 2000, 2004, and now this one. And as far as my memory can go back, every time I approached the election thinking that this is a historic event. But I think there's general consensus that this one is the one. For all the various reasons that we were going to try and look at in this panel. I'm obviously a journalist, and we journalists tend to think that the world revolves around us. In some ways, it does, because we end up shaping perception. We, the four of us here, are responsible to one extent or another for shaping, or at least contributing to the shaping of Arab perception of this particular U.S. election. Without further ado, I'm just going to open it up for discussion. I'm going to go to the panelists, introduce them quickly, and we get going. Hisham Milham is the Washington-based correspondent for An-Nahar, the leading Lebanese daily. Al Qabas, the Kuwaiti daily, and Radio Monte Carlo in France. He is currently the host of Across the Ocean, a weekly talk show for Al Arabiya. Hisham can be seen as a contributor to various programs, and he has tremendous experience of the Washington scene. It'll be interesting to hear his insight. Then we have Dalia Mujahid, who's a senior analyst and executive director of the Gallup Center for Muslim Studies, a nonpartisan research center dedicated to providing data-driven analysis on the views of Muslim populations around the world. With John Esposito, she is co-author of the book Who Speaks for Islam? What a Billion Muslims Really Think. She's based here in D.C. And then we have Muhammad Al-Minshawi, who's editor-in-chief of Taqrir Washington. And before joining Taqrir Washington, Mr. Minshawi worked as the managing editor for Global Issues, an Arabic language bimonthly publication. He also served as a Washington correspondent for daily pan-Arab newspaper Al-Sharq Al-Awsat, where he covered the White House, the State Department, and Congress. Now we get down to it. Hisham, if I may start with you. As I said in my opening remarks, there's virtually universal consensus that this is a historic election, whether you talk to people from Africa, Latin America, Asia, they all agree that this is a historic election. In what way do you think we Arabs see it as being historic, as different from the way others in other parts of the world do?
The world that the next American president is going to inherit from George Bush, probably Barack Obama, or at least if the world had any say, they already voted for Barack Obama. The world that the new president will inherit, including the Middle East, is radically different than the world that George Bush inherited from Bill Clinton 8 years ago. This is a more brittle world. This is a world that is facing economic and political uncertainty, as we've seen in this country recently. As far as the Middle East is concerned, the region that now, during the George Bush reign, we are calling it the Greater Middle East, after George Bush's tsunami, or if you want to be, or rampaging years, it's more fragmented politically. Economically, it's facing a great deal of uncertainty, with few islands of exceptions, such as in the Gulf. But even there, there's new uncertainty on the horizon. There is something that we haven't seen in recent years, that is the rising tension between the sectarian tensions between the Sunnis and the Shia, various entrenched Arab autocratic regimes, as well as Iran, which is worse than autocratic, are facing tremendous social, economic challenges, not only from assertive and at times armed groups, but also from the growing army of young men and women who are facing an uncertain future. Many of them are underemployed. Many of them will be unemployed. Beyond that, obviously, President Bush is going to bequeath to his to the new president, two costly, bloody wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan, two wars where we don't see an end in sight anytime soon, a war against terror, quote-unquote, which is badly framed, conceptually flawed, because you cannot wage a war against tactic, because terrorism is a tactic, not an ideology. Instead of saying clearly, we are waging a relentless, unmerciful, unending war against Al-Qaeda and its like-minded groups, which will be understandable. Waging a war where we don't talk about crusades and when we don't talk about Islamofascism, borrowing from European history and experiences, things that are alien to the Middle East, and then project them over the Arab and the Muslim world. even the so-called freedom agenda that the president waged in the Middle East led to very painful results. In fact, George Bush, I give him credit, in his second inaugural speech, he did say something that no previous American president since the Second World War dared to say, which is simply, we, the Americans, through both Republican and Democratic administrations for the past 60 years, looked the other way when our buddies in the Arab and the Muslim world, our friends that we slept with, were engaged in massive violations of the human rights of their own people, not their citizens, because they don't have citizens, they have subjects there. And we looked the other way in the name of stability, free flow of oil from the Gulf, and striking alliances with these regimes against the Soviet Union during the Cold War. There was this naive approach on the part of the Bush administration that if you have snap elections in societies in the Middle East, you will have the right people elected. Somebody should have reminded them that democracy requires tradition, vibrant or more or less lively civil societies. And yet, in a region that was pulverized, literally and physically, by autocratic regimes over the few decades, you know, since the Second World War, to put it clearly, political life was destroyed. The so-called liberal era in between the First War and the Second War in places like Egypt and Iraq, where you did have a semblance of political life, political parties. I'll finish. This was destroyed. And then we had elections, these snap elections, in which the wrong people, as far as the Bush administration and as far as I'm concerned, got elected. So this legacy, two unending wars, two bloody wars, a badly framed war on terror, a badly executed freedom agenda, this is the legacy that George Bush is going to leave. Now, one word about the historicity of this whole thing. There is very good reason to be fascinated with the American election this year. This is the first time we see a credible woman candidate, Hillary Clinton, getting almost 18 million people. And then you had the candidacy of Barack Obama. Because of his biography, because of his history, because of his views, because of where he grew up, he fascinates the whole world, including the Arab world. So in the Arab world, people are looking at this election with a mixture of fascination and cynicism, fascination and even horror. And the cynicism is understood because those in the year 2000 who were cheerleading George Bush because they thought naively that he's going to be like his father were disappointed, obviously. And so people will tell you nothing will happen. The Americans will continue to be, you know, the friends of Israel, the friends of Arab autocratic regimes, and nothing will change. On the other hand, people look at Obama. They are, you know, they would hope that his views on Iraq, withdrawal, timetable for withdrawal, engaging Iran, could lead to a new page with the Middle East. And I think it's going to be funny watching Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran trying to demonize an American president whose full name is Barack Hussein Obama. Good luck, Ahmadinejad. So if Obama is elected, the world will be more charitable to America. They'll probably give us a longer honeymoon, a longer grace period. And one final word, it's funny in the Arab world when they, like the Europeans, love to lecture the Americans about tolerance and this and that, you know. Many of my friends, people who studied in this country who speak beautiful English, got PhDs from the best American schools, come and whisper in my ear, do you really believe that the Americans will elect a black man? They don't know that they are projecting their own silly, stupid biases and prejudices and discrimination on the American electorate. And I keep telling them, yes. And if you want to know, I voted for him. Anyway, the point is, if Barack Obama is elected, the world will be more understanding of America, and I think the world will give us some time here in the United States to sort out the mess that was created during the 8 years of Bush's reign.
Okay. Thank you, Hisham. Dalia, just to pick up where Hisham left off, the issue of Barack Obama. If, and it's obviously a big if, but if all was hunky-dory between the United States and the Arab world, Do you think that the Arab world would have been excited and enthused about Barack Obama just on the merit that he is the first African-American candidate with a real shot at the presidency?
Well, let me first start by asking the question, do Arabs believe that a change in the White House is a significant change in regards to policy toward their region? And the answer to that question is the majority do not. So we have asked people around the world and in majority Muslim countries if they think the change in administration will make a difference. And the majority either say they don't know or they say for sure that they don't think a difference will occur, primarily in the Palestinian territories, where 73% say it will make no difference. So let's start with that as a basis. What we're looking at is a contest between people who look at Barack Obama as a hope and people who are indifferent. So our election in the Arab world is a contest between Obama and indifference. Very few people support McCain. Now, is there a significance to his biography, to the fact that he's a son of an African immigrant? I think that the answer is definitely yes, but it's more anecdotal than something that would be measured broadly. The real story out of the Arab world when it comes to this election is as significant as it is, as you rightly point out, and as different as it looks to the world, the Arab public has become so cynical and essentially so short in hope when it comes to American policy that even Obama isn't succeeding at making them believe that anything will change. They're much more likely now to look to the East. China is much more popular in the Arab world than even Europe, and certainly more than the United States. And probably positively, they're much more likely to look inward, not toward their own government, but toward essentially themselves. So when we ask Egyptians, what can Muslims do to help their own condition? The most frequent response Egyptians give is to stop depending on the United States as just a spontaneous response, not something they're choosing from a list. So more and more, I think we're losing influence and people are losing any hope that America is the answer.
Okay. Mohammed, we all follow the debate here in the United States, and we hear all the umpteen statements that are made every day about John McCain and Barack Obama, but we also hear it from those two camps about how the media have covered them. We hear complaints from the McCain camp, and that's what we've been hearing over the past couple of days, that the American media have been way too biased in favor of Obama. Now, in the Arab world, there are obviously over 20 different countries. There's even an even bigger number of Muslim countries. We know that Barack Obama is a dove in certain situations, but he is a hawk in certain other situations. When it comes to sitting with the Iranians and using diplomacy, he is on the dovish side. But when it comes to dealing with Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, for example, he's a hawk. Given this diversity of sensibilities, if you will, in the Arab and Muslim worlds, what is it that unites all countries of the region when it comes to favorability vis-a-vis Barack Obama?
Actually, when I look to the Arab world, that I visited several countries in the last few months, I see a big division between the public and the elite in the Arab world, looking at Obama thing. Public always ask, will American ever elect a black son of a poor immigrant, has some Islamic roots, educated in Islamic school in Indonesia? And the answer is obvious, he's a step away from the White House. Yet the elite that connected to the ruling regimes are very, they don't really favor it. They don't like someone who's coming from nowhere, 2 years old only in the Senate, to head a state, not only a state, it's the entire free world, the White House itself. These very traditional societies, they admire age, and they don't understand this 2 years old senator ask his running mate, who is 30 years old in the Senate, to be his assistant or vice president here. They can't get it. The dynamics of American politics and American life is not understandable in the elite level in the Arab world, because they lack the status quo and the role of old people, unfortunately. When we talk about public, and I mean here the youth, as we know, Arab countries are very useful in terms of the numbers. 70% or plus are younger than 35 years of old. And they are really excited to a point I never saw before when it comes to any American topic about Obama thing. America that they really don't like, if we look at any Gallup poll, 90% of average Arabs, they don't like anything about United States politics or American political system or foreign policy, especially after 9/11, invasion of Iraq, relation with Israel, and Afghanistanian war and the occupation there. They can't understand with those all negative media, Arab media playing and portray America as it is, actually not necessarily negative. They can't imagine with this all realities, Americans are coming close to elect that Obama thing. That's a 2 years old senator who happened to be has some Islamic root. And after 9/11, to imagine a president in America that has any Islamic roots is unimaginable in the Arab world. So youth, I believe, are very excited. They have some hope in Obama, though it's maybe illusion here, because no doubt they will be disappointed whether Obama wins, because it won't make great difference for the immediate life. And they will have great disappointment if McCain wins, of course. But the media, like any other media, most Arab professionals in media are highly educated, like Americans. They lean toward the most intelligent candidate in this campaign, which obviously Obama. So are no difference in this matter compared with European or Asian or even American media favoring Obama as for the White House.
Thank you all. And I think now we can open it up for discussion if there are any points or questions from the audience.